And now a post-recession, post-housing crisis novel about alienated teens and suburban fears. Kirk Lynn's debut novel, Rules for Werewolves, is the story of a group of young, homeless, angry kids running from their families and roaming the suburbs of Los Angeles like a pack of wolves. Here's how it begins.
Chapter 1. Susan tells Bobbert how to become a part of the pack. Hey, it's cool. I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to let you know you can't sleep there. Why not? It's going to get cold tonight. I'm doing all right. You're in the parking lot, huddled up between a dumpster and the walls of a speedy stop, without a roof. You're not doing as good as you think. Why don't you come with me? Where are we going to go? I have some friends. They have a house. Not a house they own, but just a place where we can stay. There's about 20 of us sleeping there, maybe. Look, it's not legal. If someone catches us in this house, we have to be ready to run. And if one of my friends tells you to do something, you have to do it. Or be sure you could win a fight against that person. What do you mean? You'll see.
Kirk, that's such a great beginning for the book.
So
when people ask you, what's your book about? What do you answer?
I typically just go straight forward and say I wrote a book about kids that are squatting in houses. And I say that they're playing a game where they're werewolves and the game sort of gets out of hand.
And I've read that you have some experience of breaking into empty houses yourself.
Yeah, when I was a kid in San Antonio, Texas, basically anytime I was driving around, if I saw a house that was for sale and it looked cool, I would go check it out and see if I could find a way in through a window or some way in and unlock a window. And then later at night, either would on a date or with friends when we were going out looking for a place to drink a few beers, we would go back into that house. It was never to like destroy property or to, you know, even, you know, do any graffiti or writing or anything, but just to have a place where you could be like, this is our place. I mean, I literally would pretend on the like date nights that like this was my house and this is how I was going to live someday.
Wait, did you do this a lot?
I did it a fair amount. I mean, I tried to estimate for my agent, like maybe 30, 40 times.
You're
like,
kidding.
Over the course of like junior and senior year when I was driving.
So what made you want to start with this idea and then turn it into a novel?
I mean, I think I'm somebody who longs to be a different person in a lot of ways and to change myself. And I think werewolves was a great metaphor for like change that isn't necessarily good and that you're not necessarily in control of. And also, I'm a person who likes my I love my family. I love my friends. I like being in groups that I feel like not only do I belong, but like anywhere they go, they'll take me. Mm-hmm. And so I think the idea of a pack also really suited me of like, if you can find your people, those moments when you find the people who like not just open their doors to you, but like, you know, bring you inside and you're just in with your people. You're like, oh, that's such a great feeling.
So this group of kids, your characters, they think of themselves as a pack. They talk about mating and pair bonding and making the change. They talk about being werewolves. So the last chapter actually is the rules for werewolves. There are too many to read all of, but do you have any favorites?
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me flip to that. If two werewolves fight each other, they both die because every werewolf is the exact same strength as every other werewolf, and werewolves can only fight to the death. You don't have to get bit by a werewolf, but it helps. And I like, later on, I like, sleep when you're so tired you collapse, eat when you're so hungry you attack, die when you're dead.
I like, werewolves live off nature. They look at your home and they see a nest full of eggs.
When I was writing the book, I had the great pleasure of like walking through the world and just thinking like, if I was going to steal anything I could get, eat anything I could, like you can see the world in this completely anarchic, fun way of like, where would I sleep tonight? And what would I steal? And there's so much that you can just sort of like swipe.
Really? So do you wind up walking through your neighborhood and looking at your neighbor's possessions or thinking it'd be so easy to just take that car?
Honestly, a favorite activity of my wife and I mean, we're suburbanized, we're sober citizens, but we love to take walks, especially at night when we can look, you know, not creepily, hopefully, look in people's windows, but just see how other people live with the lights on in their houses and who's sitting down to dinner and who's watching TV. And yeah,
no, you're reminding me of this great scene in the book. It's pretty early on. Somebody's walking down a suburban street at night.
Yeah.
Everybody's watching the same show, and you can tell because the same lights.
The curtains. Yeah.
They're synchronized on Super Bowl from house
night.
To house.
I mean, that's a real experience of walking around at night on Super Bowl night and everybody's doing the same thing, but in their separate houses. It's pretty amazing.
Is it amazing or is it creepy?
I mean, my knee jerk is that it's a little bit sad in some ways, especially like the house. Like if there's a big party and everybody's watching the Super Bowl and then right next door, there's somebody sitting alone watching the Super Bowl. That's sad. And then, you know, like in the book, one of the things that the werewolves get attuned to is like if everybody's watching the Super Bowl and there's one house that's dark or there's one house that's watching something else, they're like, that's a vulnerable house. Those people aren't with friends or lined up with people.
So these werewolves are teenagers, whatever. Yeah. They're definitely on the feral side. And some of it is amusing, but also kind of sad. Like they break into these places filled with jacuzzis and freezers filled with food and big screen TVs, and they watch all the videos and they ransack bathroom cabinets and kind of trash these places like, you know, big overgrown animals run amok.
I think it's pretty sad too. I mean, as a kid, I was really obsessed. I read every summer for the longest time, I read On the Road. I thought it was the greatest book ever. And then came to one summer when I read it and I was like, oh my God, this is the saddest book I've ever read. That all this running around drinking and thinking they're having a good time is actually quite lonely and sad and dispossessed. And so I think the freedom I think that the werewolves long for is not necessarily to be found in stealing these things, but the greatest freedom they have is actually when they bond with one another, when they feel tight with someone else, when they feel like somebody will protect them or take care of them.
I guess what I'm asking is, what is that freedom, that wildness that, you know, shows up in things like On the Road?
I've been thinking a lot about the notion that maybe it's all a myth, but the idea that there used to be a time when you could, if you weren't doing well where you were doing, you could strike out into the frontier and go into the wilderness and make your own space, make your own way in the world. And that has, we've sort of exhausted the wilderness, much to the wilderness's dismay, and that the new frontier is in sort of behavior. I mean, one of the big, I think, attractions to the metaphor of the werewolf is I was once a big drunk and drank terribly and had these violent transformations that were brought on by alcoholism. And the great thing about quitting was that, you know, I got to be a new person. But it was interesting to see the people who were, there were people who were less willing to let me be a new person that you get sort of surprised by. They're used to certain behaviors from you. Not just like, oh, Kirk needs to be drinking, but like, you should be louder and wilder and crazier. And like, well, that may not be who I want to be today or for the next 20 years.
You were saying you used to read On the Road.
Yeah.
Every year for years. And I was thinking, there's that tension, maybe in all stories, that tension between home and away. You know, people are either looking for a home or they're leaving a home, but, you know, something has to happen and it almost always involves leaving or looking for a home.
Yes. And these people are literally homeless. I hesitate to say that it's just in your teens and 20s because I think it, unfortunately, I think happens multiple times in most people's lives where you have this sense of not feeling like you belong at your place of work or, God forbid, in your marriage or your family. I think most people relate to this sense that we have to find their own home, or this isn't my home right now. These people, I need to go find my home, whether it's another marriage or another place to work and make your living or another group of friends. I wonder if it's our nation is obsessed with it because of the nature of like sort of making our own home here.
Right.
But I do think there's so much longing about having. I was looking through sections. I'm going to do a reading tonight, and there's so much longing for, like, let's have a farmhouse, or let's, you know, we'll be with each other, we'll camp out. There's all this longing for, like, a space where, like, there'll be a rest in some way.
Could you end by reading us a little bit from one of those sections?
Let me flip to one. I want you and I to have a place of our own, a house. You know the way a cul-de-sac is, with all the fronts of the houses facing one another really close in a circle? But out the back doors, we'll all have big farms fanning out like a pie chart. And you and I are the hunters for the group. And you and I go out for a couple weeks at a time and set up a little camp and live off venison jerky and water from some nearby creek. Most nights we lie on a blanket by the fire and we stare up at the stars. And in the morning when we wake up, we don't say a word. Silently, we'll roll up our blankets and go out into the fields and wait for the deer. We always know where the other one is, so we don't accidentally shoot each other. And when we get back, there's a big barbecue, and we eat some of the deer right away, roasted over an open fire, as we butcher the rest of it to be smoked. And then everybody tells us what happened while we were gone. And we have wives, and they tell us what happened with our kids while we were gone. And we're not gone that much.
But it's our job to go sometimes.
That's their fantasy, is to both be at home and also be able to leave it.
Yeah, to have both at the same time. I mean, that's why novels are so beautiful to me, is you can sort of sit in home in your bed and you can travel insane distances and over insane times, yeah.
Kirk Lynn talking about his new novel, Rules for Werewolves. He is the artistic director of Rude Mechs Theater Collective, and he teaches playwriting and directing at the University of Texas at Austin.